Today's episode is about communication and how to influence others to take action for the climate. We have the pleasure to talk to Ragnhild. Hi.
Hi. Welcome. Thank you very much.
You are an expert on how to communicate in ways to make impact, create change. For example, you run your own Swedish podcast, Klimatpodden, focusing on climate action. And you also take action yourself through climate activism. Is it really true that you sat on a road, putting yourself at risk, as an attempt to make a difference?
Yes, it is. Since the climate group I belong to is Extinction Rebellion, and we believe that civil disobedience is a method to reach our goals. And so this was the first time this happened was in 2019, yeah, almost 1.5 years ago. And it was here in Gothenburg, and we decided to block the road to sort of disturb the system, to make people wake up that we are in a climate crisis. So we gathered, and we this was an open Facebook event, and the police were aware of this. So they came to this place in the center of Gothenburg and told us, okay, you can sit in the road for 7 minutes. And we were like, oh, what? Okay. So, but then of course, we decided to stay after these 7 minutes. And I hadn't decided beforehand that I would do this because, I mean, if someone would have asked me a couple of years ago, I would have thought that this was very extreme to do a thing like this. But I felt this really physical need to put my body in the way of the system after talking to many climate scientists and so, and realizing that this, how bad the situation really is. So during this blockade, this action, I decided that, okay, I will sit down. And when the police asked me, do you want to leave? You can leave now and there will be no consequences, or will you sit here? And I said, I will sit here. So very peacefully, they carried me away. And I don't know the name of this crime in English, but we were interrogated later on at the police station. So we risk fines for this action, doing this. But I mean, nothing has happened so far. It was quite a long time ago. But it's also important, as part of the civil disobedience, we stand for our actions. I mean, we never hide or try to escape or anything, because it's we admit that we did this. It's not like, oh, I didn't do it. It's like, I stand for what I do, but I don't consider it a crime, since it's we are in a climate emergency.
When do you think that civil disobedience is necessary?
I think that when you have tried everything else, I mean, today I you know this list of memories that comes up in on your Facebook page. I realized it was 6 years ago that I was part of a climate call. It was a very big international climate manifestation, very lawful and so on. And I've also been part of Fridays for Future, and I've been emailing politicians. I voted, of course. And I realized that nothing helps. I mean, we still have this, the global temperature is rising all the time, and the emissions are also rising. So we are still on our way to, I mean, a catastrophe. And then I feel that I have to do everything I can to stop this from happening. I want to be able to leave this planet to the future generations in a way so that they can live on this planet. And then I feel that civil disobedience is something that I'm willing to try, because it has worked before in history. I mean, Without civil disobedience, women would not be able to vote. And India with Gandhi, I mean, they got their independence because of civil disobedience. So there are a lot of examples through history where civil disobedience has worked. And to me, it's of course very important that it's peaceful. I mean, I would never use violence because then I think you lose. So that is extremely important to me. And I think also in Sweden we are very unused to this form of protest because we are so used to that the politicians take care of everything and we can vote every fourth year and that is enough. But now it's not enough anymore. I think we have to be more active as citizens.
So is this a way to make politicians and decision makers aware of the crisis, the emergency, and a way to make them wake up and realize the seriousness?
Yes, and I think that if I show that I'm willing to risk fines and maybe even prison because of this, then hopefully people around me and politicians realize that I would not do that if it wasn't an emergency. And it's, you just have to listen to the science. I mean, it's as Greta Thunberg says, just listen to the scientists.
Why do you think it is that despite all the scientific facts that there isn't enough efforts or push in the right direction? Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I keep asking myself that question. It's really hard to understand. But I think that there are many factors, of course. One is that the fossil fuel industry knew this a long time ago, and they have actively worked to greenwash this and to hide the evidence that we have this climate crisis. And they knew that if they keep on doing what they were doing, that it would not be good for the planet. So I think that, because I mean, a lot of even right-wing politicians like Margaret Thatcher, and we have Swedish also politicians who really were worried about this fact that we have this climate change. A long time ago. So, and then something happened and it was all silenced and you didn't talk about it anymore. You didn't hear any news about it for a long time. And I think that the fossil fuel industry was very successful in this campaign, unfortunately. And I think this is really a crime against humanity. I mean, there should be like the Hague Tribunal, you know, after the Second World War when the Nazis were
convicted.
Yeah, were convicted for their crimes. I mean, there should be a similar tribunal against these crimes.
Yeah, some consequences.
Yeah, some consequences. And I think that, and I also, one other thing is that I think that people are not really aware of how deep the crisis is. I think that a lot of people in Sweden no, there is a climate change and that it's not good, but I think that quite few people know how bad it is. So that is another reason. And of course, since now media is covering this topic a lot more than they used to, but still, I mean, it's not nearly enough. And I think as long as we don't, that media doesn't show how big the crisis is and the politicians don't talk so much about it, then people will not know, of course.
Yeah.
And then it's hard to act. And then, of course, we have this, I mean, we want to deny bad facts. I mean, it's human to do that. We want to keep on living as we do with our lives. And also in Sweden, so far, the effects of the climate crisis has not been so obvious, unless you are a farmer. And I mean, 2018 was a really dry and hot summer. Yeah. And if you were running a farm, you had problems then. I mean, you had to slaughter maybe your animals and so on. But for a person living in the city, I don't know. I can look out here and I can't see the climate crisis. I mean, it's really hard.
Exactly. It's not here right
now. It's not like we have this pandemic now, COVID-19. Mm. And that's very obvious because people die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But there is a lot of wildfires going on in the US. Do you think that that will bring more attention to?
I hope so. Sometimes I don't know, because it feels like the deniers, the climate deniers, they always find another reason for this happening. I mean, we could see in Australia where they also had this terrible fires. And the government sort of kept on denying what was happening and that there was this climate crisis. So I don't know, but I hope that. But I talked to a Swedish journalist, climate journalist covering climate change, Erika Björström. She is on Swedish television, and she said, I think maybe there has to be a real catastrophe, like London is flooded and 100,000 people die or something before we start to react. I hope she's not right, but sometimes I'm afraid it is true that we need more crisis before we start to act.
And the risk then is that it is too late by
that
time.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So that is really so hard. And I think that we are so entangled in this fossil fuel society that it's so hard to think outside the box. We are so brought up, especially in my generation, we are so brought up with this idea of that we have to work a lot, earn a lot of money to be able to buy many things and to travel, to go by plane everywhere. And that is sort of the notion of a happy life. And we have to rethink that. And I think that is so hard for us because we have been taught that this is what a successful life looks like.
And when we have a society where people can afford to consume much, that is when society is wealthy and healthy.
Exactly.
I mean, now after COVID, they're talking about, you know, getting everyone to start consuming again. And I'm like, yeah, is that what we want? Shouldn't we have take this opportunity now and rethink things?
Yeah, I was hoping that for a long time that we would take this opportunity to start something really new, to have a green transition. But now I don't know. It seems like it's a lot of forces fighting for going back to business as usual. And that scares me because I think that this pandemic has given us an opportunity to change how we behave and how we live our lives and so on.
And we see that it's possible to do radical
changes. Exactly. So, yeah. So when we know there is a crisis, we can change. Mm. That's obvious. So that is kind of hopeful.
Definitely, yeah.
So, but we need politicians who speak the truth, who tell the truth about the crisis. And I mean, we have these press conferences, or we had these press conferences from the authorities every day about the pandemic. We should have that about the climate crisis as well, I think. What's happening now and what are we doing and so on. Because then I think people would wake up. They would have to.
Yeah.
But that's why I have become a climate activist, because I don't believe anymore that we could lean back and just wait for the politicians to fix this, because they never will unless they feel there is a lot of pressure from beneath, and that this is what people want. They want change, even if it's unpopular in the short run.
Are there other ways to also make impacts? I mean, especially for decision makers, politicians, if we want to impact them, do you think that climate activism is the most powerful way to do that?
I think that you have to work on all sorts of levels. I mean, levels. I hope that everyone will become an activist. That civil disobedience will be the normal. That to be passive will be extreme and not to be an activist. But of course, we need like mailing politicians, talking to politicians. All sorts of things, because it's not just one action that will change everything. There are many, many things. The media has to, the journalists have to do their job in covering this in a serious way, because they still, I think we have really good, some really good journalists who are very good at reporting on the climate crisis. But you can still see like the public service radio inviting people like Lennart Bengtsson, who is, he's like, I don't know the English word, but he's not a climate denier because he says that there is climate change. But we are not in a hurry, and especially here in Sweden, we don't have to do very much because we are not the problem. China is the problem and so on. So, and then I think, as a journalist, you lack information, you lack knowledge, because otherwise you would not invite a person like that. And I think that is more dangerous than someone who is a climate denier who says it doesn't exist, it's not us, and yeah, so on. Because they are very easy to ignore. Mm. But a person who says, oh, I am a scientist and I have discovered that it's not, we are not in a hurry and so on, because then people who listen feel that, okay, I don't have to worry about this.
Yeah, I can continue.
Yeah, my life. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because I struggle a bit in my personal network, in my just social hemisphere. They can litter or consume in a way that is not sustainable at all. Mm. So overconsumption. Mm. And do you have any advice for someone like me to, what can I do to influence them to realize that their actions matter too?
Mm. Yeah, that is a good question. I think that if you yourself live as you teach, I mean, if you do what you believe in and live in a more sustainable way, then I think you will influence them. But it's very hard to blame people. I'm not sure that works very well. But for example, when I stopped flying, I went to London on train and I wrote this Facebook post where I said that, okay, is it possible to go by train to London, or am I a crazy person doing this? and I wrote about how I traveled and why I did it and so on. So I didn't say that everyone who flies is an idiot. I just tried to tell them what I did. And I got so many reactions on this. It was like, oh, very well done. I would like to do it, but it's very hard for me, and so on. So I think that is one way of talking about it. And it's not black and white. I mean, it's not like, I'm not a perfect person. I also live in this fossil fuel society, which we are all caught up in. So I do a lot of things that are not sustainable, but I try to I try to change them and to behave in a better way. But also I think it's important that there has been a lot of focus on the individual, but we have to change the system. So that could also be something you could discuss maybe with your network, that we need system change to not put the pressure on just one person, because it's I mean, of course it's important, but no matter how much I recycle, it won't save the planet. We have to change like on a broader level. So yeah, but I do believe a lot in talking about these issues, to be sort of, sometimes you can feel as a party pooper when you start to talk about this, because it's like, okay, we had a nice time until you started to discuss climate change. But yeah, and you can maybe ask people, do you, how they feel about these questions, if they are worried, because there has been a lot of surveys showing that people are worried about climate change. And Maya Rosén, who is a friend of mine, she runs this We Stay on the Ground to make people stop flying or flying less. And she says that we do, which I believe is very true, we do what people in our network do.
Yeah.
And she has this very good question, I think, that if everyone around you stopped flying, would you keep on flying then? And that is a good question, because then you probably wouldn't.
No.
Or, and she's also convinced that people don't, if they knew how bad it is to fly, they would stop or try to not fly so much. So I think that, yeah, it's a question of knowledge and realizing how bad the situation is, and that you have an impact, because that is also very common, that people say, it doesn't matter what I do, because I'm just one person. But look at Greta Thunberg. I mean, how many people has this single person inspired? And
yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, you can make a big difference, right?
Yeah, and also I had this conversation with someone on Facebook today who said this I'm so tired of this argument that, but look at China. And I was like, it's not an excuse for us not doing anything. If no one, there is always someone else who is worse. So with that argument, no one would ever have to do anything, because, yeah, so it's, I can't do everything, but there are some things that I can do.
And if Sweden doesn't take our, if we don't take our responsibility in Sweden, what other country will take the responsibility?
Exactly. And we have a very, we are very privileged in this country. So, I mean, we have all the reasons to do it, and it's quite easy for us, I would say, compared to many other people. And also we have this obligation to do it, since we, in the rich world, contributed much more to the climate crisis than poor people, who now suffer the most.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's also about a question about justice, climate justice.
So what are your plans now for the future?
When I was younger, I didn't imagine that I would spend so much time being a climate activist. I would probably do a lot of other things. But now I feel that I will continue with this. I'm convinced I will continue with this activism for the rest of my life. So I try to do it in a sustainable way, because it's very easy to get exhausted, because it's not like, okay, Tuesday next week, we are done. Because, it's a long fight. So I will keep on doing that in different ways. And I will try to inspire other people to become activists in different ways. And I mean, there are so many things you can do and engage in. And to show people also that it's fun, because it's not like I live this miserable life. I feel that this is like the most meaningful thing I have ever done. So it gives me a lot of strength as well. And right now, of course, we have Primraf, so I'm very engaged in it's this oil refinery in Sweden who wants to expand. And if the decision is up to the government, and if they get to expand, then they will be the biggest emitter. They will be the biggest emitter in Sweden of CO2. So I will try to continue to do what I can to stop that from happening.
This was only the first part of the conversation with Ragnhild. Don't miss part two in the next episode. Ragnhild will talk more about her journey into climate activism, what is life quality to her, and she will also propose valuable tools to use when trying to influence others. It's going to be very interesting.